Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 89 of Little Things for Bonsai People. I am in Southeast Louisiana, and it is 100 degrees, sometimes 101, 2,
Ew.
And so on. The humidity's been down, but it has been a boiler out here. A lot of my trees are starting to get a little heat stressed, so it's not the funnest time of year, but yeah, everything's going pretty okay over here. But this time I'm also joined by one of my co-hosts, Carmen Lesko-Bienski. How's it going over there, Carmen?
Well, it's all fine.
Yeah, you've had a lot of big changes recently, which we'll discuss in this episode.
It's been a week.
Yeah, it's been quite the week for Carmen, and we were an episode late this past week because we've got a lot going on. If you guys weren't cued in on the previous episode where we talked about being bonsai parents, you might get a little bit of background lore on why we're slightly delayed on some of these things now, but it's okay. It's all for good. And then Mike was with us last time, but he is he's off kind of doing his thing, you know, working. He travels and then goes back to Florida and has a lot of catch up work there when he travels. So we'll catch up with Mike later on. But any other remarks before we get into today's topic, Carmen?
I don't think so.
No, pretty straightforward today. Cool. So yeah, today we're going to have a couple of topics. We're going to talk about, obviously we're going to catch up with Carmen. She's got some things going on, in her part of the world in Portland with Michael Hagedorn and her apprenticeship. And then we also have a discussion on AI, artificial intelligence, how it's affecting art. And it has recently started to approach onto bonsai as an art as well. I've seen a lot of things popping up recently, and it's been, I have a lot of mixed feelings about this, and sure Carmen does too.
Oh yeah, you know, I've got an opinion.
Yep. So, but yeah, we're going to talk about that a little bit and the do's and don'ts about artificial intelligence and what's going on right now, and if it's affecting the art world as a complete package. So this isn't out of the ordinary right now for everybody else, but also we'll be talking about some end of summer, kind of a summertime check-in. I know we talked about summer dormancy, but we want to talk about going into the fall season as well, some of the things that we're going to be looking out for on our trees, especially for the beginners out there. We want to make sure we kind of hone in some things that are looking a little scary right now, but we want to, you know, make sure you guys feel confident going into the fall, because things get a little weird. Like for here in Louisiana, like I was saying, it's really hot, and then trust me, it calms down. So if you're new to bonsai, this is your first summer, this episode should be pretty good for you, apart from the artificial intelligence talk. But yeah, before we get into those topics, I do want to mention our podcast is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a bonsai best bud and hang out in the Discord with these amazing people. I shout out all the names at the end of the shows. So if you are the end of the episode, so if you want to hear your name shouted out every episode, just wait till the end, or you can fast forward past all the conversation, which I don't know why you would do that. But we are going to talk about really quick our featured bonsai best bud, Bonsai Samurai, this week. Awesome.
Woo-hoo.
Thank you so much for subscribing at the $5 level. Every little bit helps, buys us coffee, helps us get merch printed and out to you guys at conventions so you guys can rep your favorite podcast show, your favorite bonsai podcast show. So thank you so much for sponsoring us at that level. And then we have a brand new bonsai best friend in Montana Bridgman. Thank you so much, Montana Bridgman. I don't know if that's your real name. If it is, that's awesome. But if it's like an alias, then it's pretty cool too. So thank you so much for jumping on with us and joining our patrons this week. And then, of course, we got our specimen best buds, Anra Yuen and Bill Butler of Bill's Bayou. Thank you, Bill, for holding it down for us, of course. And then our show sponsor, Joshua Roth Tools, our main sponsor. Thank you so much, John, with Joshua Roth. If you want to hear from John, there was an episode that we recorded with him a while back where you can hear about all of his various interests. Really cool guy. And then I can't go on much further without mentioning our editor, Matt O'Donnell. Makes us sound smart, cleans up our audio, and makes us enjoyable to listen to. Go over to mattodonnell.com to fill out a contact form, or you can contact him via email or on his Instagram or on his Facebook and talk about engineering project that you want to do with him as far as audio goes. You might want to start your own podcast show, or you might want to talk about music. He's a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee, as an all-around awesome guy. It's in the script. I say it every single time. That was the best delivery I've ever done on the intro. That was weird.
That was great.
Yeah.
Good job.
So, yeah, we might have to chalk that one up as like greatest hits for little things right there. Matt, you can take that one and put it in a clip show later or something.
Mm-hmm. delivers
on the intro really well, and then and then it doesn't really matter because I should just be good at it every time. But yeah, any announcements as far as upcoming shows? I know we usually shout out some of the stuff that's coming up. I know that in October with Pacific Bonsai Expo, and they just teased mm-hmm. you as a presenter, Carmen.
They sure did. Yes, so. I am going to be presenting at Pacific Bonsai Expo in Oakland, California, October 26th and 27th.
Coming up really soon.
It really is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. I got kind of giddy when I saw my name listed with all the other big names who are going to be there. I was like, it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, real excited about that. So swing by and say hi.
Do you know what you'll be presenting on?
No.
Okay, cool. We won't. Okay. Spoiler alert. Carmen doesn't know yet, but we'll figure it out.
I'm going to be doing some kind of demo. I'm hoping on a Hemlock, probably some wiring and styling, but it hasn't been completely nailed down yet, but we'll see. We'll see.
Cool. So prospects on, well, we might know, but you will know by October, I'm sure. That is late October. 26th to 27th this year. It's going to be in Oakland, California. A show put on by Jonas Dupuy and Eric
Schrader.
I didn't want to get his last name wrong. But yeah, awesome crew. Really, really good show. I know they changed locations this year. I heard last year was spectacular, but they should be delivering a great show either way this year again.
Yeah, I think they've got more space this year. So I think the highlight from the last show was highlight was the lighting.
Yeah, there you go.
Of that space. So I think that they had to give that up for more space. But I think that it should be a little bit. I mean, there'll still be a ton of people there, but hopefully it'll feel a little bit less crowded. There'll be more breathing room. So. Yeah, exciting. I know some of the trees that are going, and they're pretty awesome trees. So pretty cool. Exciting.
Yeah, that's nice to know some of the trees and the people that are going. So you kind of, have you checked in with any of them? You know some of these people personally?
Yeah, a couple. And then there's a few trees here in the yard that are going to be heading that way that I've gotten to do some work on. So
there you go.
Of course, those ones are just perfect, you know.
They have to be. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, they wouldn't be prepped by Carmen herself, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you guys check that out. I know there's still tickets available. I don't know. You can go over to PacificBonsaiExpo.com or just Google it. Yeah, I don't know if that's exactly the website. It's PacificBonsaiExpo.org. Sorry. I got it right here. I'm a doofus. And then... I launched recently the flyer, like the teaser for, say, Bonsai 2025. The little things are confirmed to be there. We will be there. Me, Mike, Carmen will be doing a live recording of the show, as well as a kind of like a three at one time majoitoire demonstration and also workshops, too. We're going to make it fun. So it's going to be a good time. You guys come hang out. Say Bonsai 2025 is going to be March 28th to the 30th, 2025. So yeah, if anybody wants to show a tree at this show, I know it's the Southeast. We're talking like, we just talked about West Coast, California, mm-hmm. and now we're talking about a Gulf Coast. Like, I don't know if anybody... knows what the Gulf Coast is outside of people that live in Louisiana and Texas.
I think most people know what the Gulf Coast is.
Okay. It's just weird. I don't think I've said the Gulf Coast many times because usually people are familiar with West Coast and East Coast bonsai stuff.
Yeah.
Especially New England.
There needs to be a Gulf Coast bonsai. Is there a Gulf Coast bonsai yet?
There is a Texas Lone Star Federation that is kind of becoming the Gulf Coast thing, but it's very loose.
But they need the name, you know, they need the name.
Gulf Coast Bonsai sounds really dope. Shout out to anyone out there that's got that kind of thing in mind, if you're like a director of a club, either from Texas to Florida, like Panhandle Florida, especially, if you've got something in mind, I mean, Gulf Coast Bonsai, it sounds great.
It's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. I can't organize it because it would be a conflict of interest to do that kind of stuff because
sure.
I've got a nursery and a podcast show that is kind of would have too much influence on it. But I'm just saying we would help you guys out because we already help out New Orleans Club, Baton Rouge Club, and also the Acadiana Parishes Club. So if you guys need help forming that kind of thing, it would be dope. Just saying. Anyway, see if that seed will take fruit or not. But yeah, as far as say bonsai goes, if you guys want to show a tree, we had a gentleman from North Carolina and we had some people come in from like South Florida, like 11, 12 hours away. So It's totally doable. If anyone wants to show their tree, I've traveled to Nationals 20 hours, you know, one way, 20 hours and 20 hours back with a tree. So I'm not saying that the show is going to be the biggest show ever, but, you know, we are looking for bonsai to be displayed in our show this coming year. And if you're interested, I don't care where you're at in America, if you're willing to make the trip. If you can also do a thing where I know Mike showed trees in the national show a while back and he had Shohin. And so he just took his trees on the plane with him. So, I mean, you could be smart. I mean, Carmen, you've got your, I know you've got that Japanese quince. Put that in a box and hold it on your lap.
Yeah, I could do that.
Something like that. If you're feeling brave with it, it's a little bit of a bigger tree. Something like that, you know. Like a Shohin to like a slightly more Chuhin sumo.
Mm-hmm. If it's, yeah, you could do a little bonsai kyurien.
Yep, just whatever. But yeah, if you want to show a tree, you can email me at evan@underhillbonsai.com. And I'm totally down for any suggestions or anything that you guys are looking for as far as display, but we have quite some time, so don't worry about it. It's not any stress on me right now, but you know, we'll be approaching.
We'll save it. Yeah. We'll get you real stressed out later.
Yep, save the date, and then we're like a month out, then I'll be freaking out again.
Super stressed. I'm really excited. I've never been to Louisiana, but I've heard wonderful things, especially about New Orleans and the area that you're in, and great things about the bonsai community down there. So I'm super excited to come down and finally see it and meet everybody and play bonsai in person. So that should be super fun.
Yeah, should be awesome. Just wanted to shout out a highlight. So our previous episode, I had a couple of people reach out to me about talking about parenting and bonsai. And so there was a really nice message that was sent my way from Red Barn Bonsai on Instagram. Hey guys, just wanted to say I really appreciated the last episode of the podcast. As a father of four, I can really relate to a lot of stuff you guys were saying. Most of my work is done between 10 p.m. and 3 a.m. right now. But we don't do it because it's easy, right? Thank you. Thanks again, guys. Keep up the work. So I just wanted to put that positive comment out there, that positive message, because, I mean, every once in a while, we need to hear those things. So thank you so much.
That was really nice.
Yeah, for your comment. And I'm glad that the message is getting out to people. That was the intention, is to, you know, that mm-hmm. scare people, not make them not want to have children and try to practice bonsai at the same time. There's hope. So, but anyway, so let's get into our topics for this week. So Carmen, you've got a couple of things going on.
So I think that we can probably blame missing an episode last week on me because we're in the process of moving back to Michigan. My apprenticeship is wrapping up. I've got about 6 weeks left, and sent the family on ahead to get settled in so my son can start school on time and not have to change schools, you know, twice in 1 year. They're almost back. We've got a nice little place back there. And so I'm kind of living not quite out of a suitcase. There's probably still too much here. But kind of just, it's interesting to have so much time to myself now. But it's nice. And I've been really trying to throw myself into work for this last bit, just like project after project after project, trying to really kind of refine some of the skills that I've learned over the last 3 years, and put them into practice and get faster and all that stuff. So trying to use this time, kind of solo here as a, you know, just like final project thesis maybe, but multiple projects. So yeah, it's a lot. And then I'll be driving back across the country with three cats, which should be the most fun I've ever had in my life. It's one more that I came over here with, so.
Oh, you ended up keeping the cat that
she showed up when you were visiting the first time.
Yeah,
we kept her. She's a sweetie, so it's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, so just been kind of crazy trying to, you know, find a rental and then get everything packed up, and it just all happened really fast. It was like once we got a rental confirmed, it was like, okay, everything's going in 5 days. Like, we're ready to go. It was just nuts. So,
well, and then, and what's the drive from Portland to Ann Arbor?
It's about 35 hours.
Oh my God. It's way more than I thought.
Yeah. It's like 2,500 miles. It's pretty long.
Well, that's what I was wondering, because your husband, Lou, he was posting some images on his social media about their travels, and I was like, wait, they left like 4 or 5 days ago.
Granted, they are taking their time and making some stops along the way. Like they're stopping in Chicago for a whole day to, you know, explore, and then they're stopping at a friend's house to hang out for a night. So I think when I came out here, I did it in about 5 days, and I think you could do it in 4, but especially if you have kids or cats in the car with you,
why push it?
It takes a little bit longer to, like, you know, you have to like set up for the night, you know, at a reasonable time, and you have to take a little extra time to pack up in the morning. So 5 days is about right for it. So
I haven't had to travel that many days consecutively like that. That sounds insane.
It's a lot. You just kind of go into autopilot and like, this is just my life now. You know, like when you get on a plane and you're just like, well, there's literally nothing I can do except sit here for the next however long. It's like, there's nothing else you can do. You just keep driving.
But for 5 days, it's just, that becomes like, that is to a certain extent, it's kind of like a movie where they have like the man in the box kind of genre, where it's like you're watching this character be stuck in an environment, and then they like become a different person. I feel like a different person at the end of the truck.
Yeah, you're just like a robot. You're like, and then you try to think back to it, and like, I'm trying to remember my drive here, and you know, I only remember a couple bits of it that really, you know, like the weather was weird, or there was an interesting sight, or I was particularly like stressed out because the cats were crying, you know, like I just have these little blips. Everything else, it's just like highway hypnosis. You just don't even remember it.
Did it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that won't be until 6 weeks from now. So you got some time to kind of wrap. But it's going to go fast, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. It's going to go right by. It's actually funny. I'm actually flying back to Michigan for a family event, and then I have to fly back out here. So it's funny, it's like I'm gonna meet the boys there and then have to come back. So, I'm taking recommendations for audiobooks for the car. So if anybody has any kind of the sci-fi fantasy genre, strong female characters, so if you have any suggestions, let me know.
Me and Carmen had talked about it in the past, about the Mistborn series.
Oh, man.
The original run. So stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Do you like Brandon Sanderson's other works?
Yeah. I like most of his stuff. Actually, I was re-listening to Mistborn and I loved the first one, but then I was listening to the second and third one, and it was like kind of before he really got into, you know, the female characters having other female characters to interact with. And I was like, okay, come on. I was a little bit annoyed by it, but yeah, I really like, the Stormlight Archives is pretty good. I haven't read the newest one.
Yeah.
But I really liked the Reckoners series and, what is it? Is it Warbreaker? Mm-hmm. I love that one. Love it, love it, love it. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah.
Brandon Sanderson's great.
Now you're talking about female characters in fantasy and like, mm-hmm. and like big, long, these are slow burn fantasies too, which is really mm-hmm. interesting. But we were watching Lord of the Rings, the extended cut of Fellowship yesterday.
Oh,
just for fun. Me and a buddy of mine get really into it. And so we made like a whole day around it. And we were thinking about it. And there is a video on YouTube you can go look up. Go look up Lord of the Rings, all of the Lord of the Rings, but only the interactions between female characters in the movie. And it's hilarious because there's literally 3 seconds.
Oh my
and,
God.
And then it like starts the opening credit and then it goes straight to the end credits within 3 seconds. just go look it up. It's really funny. It's not what you expect. You're like, oh, and then you go back and watch the entirety of like the extended cut series. It's like 16 hours of content.
Yeah.
3 seconds of like two female characters in a row. It's just a thing.
It's so ridiculous. And like, it kills me too, the movies or the shows or the books that everybody's like, yeah, feminist power, but it's like one woman and like there's no other women and all her friends are still dudes, but like, yep.
She can
what?
Hang with the boys.
Like, it's so ridiculous. It's like, come on. I digress.
But anyway, back to your situation change. And you know, we talked about like earlier on how Michael is suddenly began to dump a lot of projects onto you, kind of like a final test kind of feel.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's, you know, just in, you know, it's not to like hurt you or anything. It's to test and push you a little bit.
It's supposed to help me, but I already feel like I'm failing. So.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I don't know how Michael is. He might push you to your breaking point. We'll see.
I mean,
but yeah,
it's like the whole, you know, I don't know if your dad ever did this, but it's the whole, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. When you don't follow through with something, it's like, oh, I'm trying so hard and it's just not good enough. Mm-hmm. But
you'll be fine.
I'm sure it's all fine. It's all fine.
Yeah.
It's good. They're fun projects. I just trying to work on my pace in particular. So
you're leaving at exactly 6 months from like now, from like the time of this recording.
You mean 6 weeks?
I'm sorry, 6 weeks.
I don't know exactly. Actually, I don't have an exact date yet.
Okay.
But I'm starting back at my old job sometime in October. So it's kind of a fluid end time, start time. Actually, I'm going to try to actually nail it down next week.
At least a week
I need
off.
To at least. Oh, no. The week off is the driving.
That sucks. Okay, well, but at least when you go back to...
What is time off?
When you go back to the university, at least the collection will just be a smooth transition where you're like, okay, let's reacclimate myself with this Bonesai collection again.
Yeah, it should be pretty straightforward.
Because,
I mean, it's my old job, so it's essentially what I've been doing for the last forever. So it should be pretty easy.
So just make sure you remind us like right before you leave, we'll get like a good recording in where we'll get like a reflection of how you feel.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, we'll wait like about a month or so when you're back at your job and then we'll see how you feel then.
Yeah. And I'll be like,
it'll probably be way different. But anyway, so we're getting really close to that time for Carmen to move on from her apprenticeship. It's pretty cool. So you guys just keep an eye out for that. But yeah, let's get on to something that's a little bit more controversial, just something I wanted to touch on a little bit, something I've been seeing popping up a lot on social media and even kind of flooding. Like if you do a Google search, it's starting to become a little unfortunate. And I don't know how else to warn people about it, but yeah, artificial intelligence or AI art has been kind of a thing in the art world for the past... what are we going to say, like 2 years now. It's been kind of in and out.
Yeah. Now it's really like
it's starting to ramp up. Yeah.
Yeah.
AI, they're starting to refine like what it's capable of producing. And so I know we have listeners from all various age groups and different exposures to different art and different types of media and stuff. So just to kind of simplify this topic, AI art is basically where a thing happens called AI scrubbing. So I don't know who made these programs, and it's going to be all the major players in basically in the online, like in the internet or the information world. So stuff like Microsoft and Google and any of the other big distributors. What would be another one? Apple would be another one. Stuff like that. So they've all kind of jumped in on with this AI influence on everything that they do now. So you turn on your web browser on your computer, and now on your cell phones especially, you'll see it. You'll have this little blimp on the bottom, especially if you have like newer updates on cell phones like iPhones and Androids, where it's like AI assistant, and it's like, what the hell is this? And so it's just like this engineered artificial intelligence that reaches out and scrubs the entirety of the internet, and it tries to cornerstone information for you in your particular to read like your searches and things that you're interested in, and try to accumulate those and then cater an answer or cater a service towards you as an individual person. But this has been going on for a decade, you know, advertisements. So advertisements that are aimed at you, like whenever you use when you're listening to you know, if you're listening to this podcast show on YouTube and you don't have YouTube Red, and you really should because it's a great service. But anyway, because I watch a lot of YouTube, you're going to get ads targeted at you in between ad breaks, and they're going to seem really relevant at the same time, kind of scary, but it's just scrubbing information. It's like getting everything it needs for you and throwing stuff right in your face. For instance, and also, by the way, announcement, Rory just turned a month old. That was yesterday. So, but Rory,
throw that in there.
I had my firstborn, and we've been like talking to him and talking about childcare and all that stuff. And we look up, and Caitlin is on her phone constantly looking up like information and helpful stuff for caring for him. And then like our Google Chrome,
give a dot, the Google Dot?
No, it's,
or do you have Alexa?
It's a streaming, it's the Fire Stick.
Oh.
Whatever
that
is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Fire Stick. We're watching Hulu. We're watching like the new Futurama. I guess God bless them for trying to make that show good still. And then we'll get just like advertisements of like baby clothes, baby diapers. And it's like, oh, well, okay. So that stuff is not old. It's not new. You know, it's been around for a while, but now the AI part of it is a new integrated. It's a new thing that's just trying to improve what they can throw at us. And then the AI art thing has been a very big controversial thing amongst artists, especially people who produce art for a living. Visual arts are, and it's starting to affect music as well. I don't know if you've seen that.
I haven't, but I'm not surprised, because I mean, if it can quote make unquote art, then it can do the same thing with music. So
yeah. And I was watching a content creator not too long ago on YouTube, and she was talking about literally, if you go to Spotify and you look up like smooth listening, I know you love this genre, smooth jazz. There was like a reference to like, if you look up smooth jazz or ambient background jazz or whatever, and there's Spotify playlists of like artificial intelligent created tracks. And you can tell if you like play some of the tracks back to back on each other and kind of like reference them, they have like the same chord progressions and like same passages, like sections in them. And it's super obvious.
Yeah.
And it's even coming down to me and Carmen's job could be in jeopardy on this podcast. Did you know that?
No. Were there going to be AI podcasts?
There could be. There's actually...
How boring.
Matt, our editor, actually brought it up to me. There's Will Sasso has a podcast show where he lets an AI like script the show for him. And that's like, that's the whole show. But it's becoming so much better now because like, because me and you and Mike have been talking so many, like we have, we're on episode 89. So there is at least an hour to 2 hours each episode. So that's,
that's a lot of hours.
That's a lot of information that AI could go and scrub from our voices. And there is a technology out there now with artificial intelligence. They probably could produce an episode of me and you talking. It probably would sound kind of weird, but it would almost sound real.
Right.
So it's everywhere. It's getting thick.
It's like the uncanny valley of bonsai podcasts.
And it could be difficult because it could take all of our mannerisms, all our stutters, and like me mispronouncing everyone's names and stuff. It would have to do. It would have to try really hard on that one. Because
I would love to hear an AI Evan just like
stuttering,
all these names.
Struggling with my first language and only language. but no, but yeah, the whole thing is kind of scary in a way. And so if you've been sleeping under a suiseki this whole time and haven't really, I love that joke. I had to throw it in there again. I'm sorry. But yeah, if you've been living under a suiseki or AKA a rock, you should be really well aware of what AI is nowadays. Now, Carmen, I shared a page to you that I saw on Facebook.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and just shout it out because it's horrible. I really wish this would stop.
No, don't give them more. Don't give them more views.
We won't give them any traction.
People are
going
to go look.
Don't go look. But we do need to make it make it aware. So after I sent you that link, and you could see it's a profile that does this. What's your first impressions? I'm going to hear your side on it.
Of just the profile of just,
like the way it is. Like, yeah, the content it's producing.
It's just garbage. It's just producing garbage. I think I have to go look at it again. I mean, it looks like somebody's real profile, but it's very clearly not. And it's just a bunch of AI images of plants and bonsai. And it's very obviously fake to someone who knows plants. But my concern is that people who aren't familiar with plants are going to see a lot of this AI stuff and think that that's real.
That's the biggest concern. Yeah.
And it's just, it's yeah. So I guess that was my first impression of that. Do you want my full feelings on AI plant photos or not yet?
Just a second. Okay. So yeah, kind of feeling that out for a second. It's like, yes, it's meant to deceive. And when it comes to bonsai is a visual art. It's a sculptural living art. There's a lot of things about bonsai that is a trick. So I'm not going to say that like bonsai has always been the most honest art form that in existence, because there's a lot of visual tricks that we use as bonsai people to create, you know, forced perspective, big chunky looking trees with tiny leaves. In reality, there's other things going on there. There's like knowing plant species and how to manipulate certain species to do certain things that would be obvious to other people who are not familiar with plants. So it sets a certain expectation when it comes to seeing a real bonsai versus seeing a AI generated bonsai. And why I'm bringing this up is because this profile that I saw recently, it's spitting out an AI image on the hour every hour, and it doesn't stop. So someone's written a bot. So a bot, for those who are not versed in what that means, is that it is another program that is using AI art formulas stuff to basically plug in information and then spit it out. And it's synced up to a Facebook account. And so at like 1 o'clock, boom, here's an image of, you know, we have And AI is basically, you just give it a prompt. And so here's a prompt. Old Asian person, man, or whatever, with really old bonsai specimen tree. And now it's queued in. It could be even more simplified. It could probably even say, man with old with old bonsai. It could probably even be as simplified as that. Mm-hmm. And so I saw a tree that was on there, and it's one of the biggest offenders. It's a it was a big triangle shaped trunk, basically like a sumo trunk in a super duper shallow pot. The pot looked like something you would see, like mm-hmm. in our field. Like in high end bonsai, it's not out of the ordinary to see old like tokoname. Is that right? The tokoname pots,
mm-hmm.
like old Japanese antiques. So it resembled an old Japanese antique. So the tree was proportion. Everything about the tree's layout was all. It was on point. I'm mm-hmm. going to have to admit the AI nailed the shape, but it was like trident maple bark with the shape of Chinese quince trunk and root system, yeah. And then on top of it was like Chinese hackberry.
Ew.
It was crazy looking. And then the branches are all laid out in this kind of curve, like they have these curly, short internode space. And you can see where the leaves are not quite attached to the branches. And you can see it. That's the uncanny valley that you're talking about there.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it. It like doesn't feel right. And then there was like some of the images have like these candles, like tea candles on the full surface for some reason. I don't know why. I don't know where that prompt got that from. And then I think the biggest offender, I really don't like seeing, like, it takes just like an old generic old man and just makes him look, you know, Asian descent of some kind. I'm like, I don't like that. That's super not cool. And so then of course the person that they show has uncanny valley out of this world there. It's a wrinkly old man type person with like their skin's wrinkly, but it's smooth. So it just gives it like this really weird feel, like there's no liver spots, there's no like hair, there's no like there's hair on their head and they might have a beard, but like their skin is otherwise like their complexion is perfect. You know, like, it's just strange looking.
Yeah.
And then the tree itself like is dust free. There's no funguses. There's no moss or lichens or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like kind of looking at these images. I'm like, okay. Think of bonsai artists today that are creating images and sharing them online for people to see them that are our original images that they have no rights to ripping that off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this tree immediately looked like a Walter Paul piece to me.
Mm-hmm.
You go over to Walter Paul's gallery and you have thousands of pictures of trees and super shallow pots with big thick trunks. He does a lot of deciduous and a lot of broadleaf evergreens that look just like that. So it's undeniably scrubbing and ripping off all of these other people's works, and that's just, I don't know. So I'm gonna pass it over to you, Carmen, to kind of give you your kind of take on it. But I have to say one more thing is that it, even if you're looking at this for quote unquote inspiration. Like if you're like, what would an old elm tree bonsai look like? And then it gave you like an inspiration. You're still not, it sets an expectation that is not feasible. It's not reachable. Probably not even in your lifetime. And I don't mean to be harsh because some of the images that they pull are just, they just won't work. Like there's things that like, especially if you're a beginner, and you want to be inspired by seeing really nice bonsai. There's bonsai that I've seen hundreds of times. And you could show me an image of some trees. And I'm so nerdy about things. I could tell you like, oh, yeah, that's a Harry Harrington, or that's a Walter Paul, or that's a Michael Hagedorn, or that's, you know, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Like I know some of these trees so well. But when I see an AI image and I'm like, what is this? It's not real. I can't go back and show you the progression. I can't tell you how that branch was grown because that branch doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just, it's all the wrong things and all the wrong ways for trying to inspire people. And then, the worst part of it is you go on these Facebook groups and it's interaction based. So there's some people who set up accounts. They're like bot accounts that get paid a certain amount for interaction on Facebook. And you have people on there who just don't know Bonsai and they're commenting, wow, amazing, beautiful, great job. I wish I could have a tree like this, so on and so forth. Guys, we need to get on these Facebook groups and shut up down or something. Get on the comments and be like, this is trash. You know, like, so I don't know. It's just something that got under my skin recently. And I do need to just put it out there that this is something that is coming up in Bonsai as well.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
So what's your take on it, Carmen? I'm sorry, I went so long on that.
No, that's okay. I struggle a lot with AI because on one hand, I find it to be something that could be incredibly wonderful and useful. And so I don't want to completely disparage AI. However, there are two things about, we'll stick with like Bonsai AI. There's two things that really bother me about what's happening right now. And one is, and this kind of affects all artists, and like you were saying, if, you know, they could at this point probably make a podcast that sounds kind of like us based off of everything that we've shared. And so that kind of like copyright infringement, essentially, of these programs taking images of people's art or, you know, using their voices or the information they've put out on the web without giving them any credit, but then creating things from this other stuff that people are putting out there, you know, to make their living. That really bothers me. I don't think that that's, you know, I don't think that's great. I don't know how to solve that problem, but it does bother me that, you know, I have friends who are artists too, or, you know, this kind of stuff, or like, you know, you're talking about music. These, you know, the AI can now get all of this information and create something from other people's work without giving them credit, the credit that they deserve. So I don't like that. The other thing I really don't like is that, like you were saying, it's giving people kind of the wrong expectations. And not even that, it's just, that's not even what real bonsai looks like. So it's just, it's like if there were pictures of all of the trees of all of the bonsai professionals, you know, all these really high quality trees within this AI program, you could probably generate something pretty cool and unique and actually maybe find some inspiration. But I feel like all I'm seeing are, you know, the typical S-curve bonsai that, you know, just like, it's so cliche. It's not even really what we do. Like you scroll through some of these images and it's like, oh, there's an S-curve azalea, there's an S-curve maple, there's an S-curve pine. Like, oh, that one has a big welcome branch. It's like, it's just all this really kind of boring stuff. Like it's not inspirational to me at all. It's just not real. So it's kind of one of those things where like AI can be used for good and for bad. And in this case, I don't think that the AI bonsai images are beneficial for a lot of these accounts. But I will go back and say, I think Pacific Bonsai Museum, I think it was them, were did some Instagram posts of AI generated bonsai that were kind of interesting. And so you can find some images that are kind of inspirational or that make you kind of think outside of the box. But I feel like the vast majority of what is just popping up in my algorithm. I'm not even looking for it. It's just showing up. It's not real trees. It's not particularly artistic. It's just annoying. And I don't like it.
Yeah.
I want it to go away.
The fantasy aspect of it gets intertwined sometimes. So that same account, you remember you're looking through it. And it's like this weird combo where every once in a while, it was like these Chia Pet looking heads of like old men with trees growing out of their heads.
Yeah.
So it's like it was like a rock sculpture thing carved to look like an old man's face with bonsai growing out the back of his head. Now, at some of these things, like someone might be listening to this show and being like, that sounds freaking awesome. But okay, well, I mean, if that's your thing, that's cool, man. But when it comes to like realism and when it comes to, like you were saying earlier, people who create things, I'll give you an example. So if you are wanting to like enter a prompt on like if you're going to use Google as your like search engine, when like 90%, maybe even more people use it to look up things online. And if you look up like Japanese maple Japanese maple bonsai, and you're like, I want to see what that looks like. And AI gives so many prompts so quickly, and there's already thousands, maybe even like 100,000 images now, that all the artists like me, that I write articles and I'm producing content. So is Jonas. So is Harry. So is, Bill Walvanis has a blog site as well. All these different images that all these artists are sharing of real bonsai, of real bonsai expos and exhibits. And then AI is going to flood your search prompt with AI images, and it's going to start pushing those images down because they have tags and highlighted like algorithm placed into them, kind of stuff like where it's like your Google search is going to get so flooded from all these tags and all these reference points are going to, because like I'm not an expert in sharing my content. Whenever I create it on underhillbonsai.com and I make an article, there is like a whole thing on there where when I write a post and I have images, I can write like all the things that can associate people's searches so that when they Google bald cypress bonsai, my image will show up. If you go to like links and then you go to the images, you'll start seeing my trees pop up in there. That's cool. That's really interesting. But one day someone's going to do like, someone's going to hit press a button on a keyboard and say AI prompt for bald cypress bonsai. And then there's going to be thousands of images that's going to flood that out. That's a fear, is that I won't be able to stick my head up above water, above all these AI images, and for people to find information that could actually help them. So I know you said over there, and I'm going to, it's a hot take for me, for the Pacific Bonsai Museum to had shared that AI art. And I know that also another, you know, because you mentioned it first, but there's another content creator in bonsai that talked about AI art and how interesting that could be. And I'm going to just shut it down right there. And I'm going to say I'm off. Like there's no support from me on my end thinking that it's interesting whatsoever. It's not helpful to other artists. Another, like something else that links up to another interest of mine is with Magic the Gathering, the artists that have been creating art for the game for so long, they're kind of cutting corners now, and they're creating AI art for those cards now, and people are losing their jobs, or they're getting, because some asshole decided that they wanted to create a bot that generated a fantasy image that ripped off a fantasy cover of a fantasy novel that nobody knows about, slapped it on a card. This is a real thing that happened. Slapped it on a card. Card becomes a chase rare. Chase rare means that it's a desirable card within a set that was released. So people were going to buy it. Boom. That company's making money. The artist who made that original cover for that fantasy novel is getting screwed. And there's no positive to this. So it's just something that I'm starting to see more of. I just want to be a voice out there to say, please be careful for what you support. If you see an image, look at the branches. Do the leaves actually connect to the nodes, to the actual branches of the tree? Do the hands of the person that's standing next to the tree, do their fingers look distorted? Is their face like super symmetrical and just looks strange? If it does, don't interact with it. Don't give it a like. Don't comment on it. Don't share it. Help us artists out. This is my like. There's a couple of other content creators that have stood on the soapbox before. I'm not the first one, but yeah. I want to be one of the ones for bonsai people, especially bonsai professionals. Like, cut the shit with the AI art, and let's try to like help push it back a little bit. Because
I feel like a lot of what's out there isn't catering to most bonsai people either. I think it's catering to the masses, yeah. But just like your Malzai or your Vans, you know, like the $15 S-curve tree you're going to buy off the side of the road, you know, like I feel like a lot of people who actually do bonsai are going to look at that stuff and be like, what is this garbage? But so like, I'm not particularly concerned for the professionals as far as, you know, business goes yet, but because an image isn't going to necessarily change, you know, what professionals are doing. But I, not to, where was I going with this? I don't remember. I mean, I still don't like it. It's still not good art. It's still not really art. And I don't think I don't think it's ever helpful to just, you know, to show people something that's not real or.
Well, you mentioned wrong. that like the side of the road, like the guy selling the bonsai in the van or the mall, kiosk bonsai, you were mentioning like how it could cater towards that crowd and inspire people to buy trees like that.
Mm-hmm. And like,
but then there's a gap. I think that's where you're kind of going. Right.
And there's still like, so like, I don't see a lot of it really affecting, you know, those of us, you know, the people who are listening to the bonsai podcasts or spending time at bonsai shows. I don't really see it affecting them yet, but it's still one of those things of like dumbing down everybody else to what bonsai really is. Like it creates
another wall.
Yeah, it's not educating anybody. It's not helping anybody. If anything, it's making people think that this is what bonsai is when it's not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's not helpful or useful in that way at all. So,
yeah,
it's disappointing.
So some closing remarks on it. We can move on to our actual bonsai related topic on this episode. But no, yeah, it's one of those things where like it sets up another thing that we're trying to do here, especially for a show like Little Things is catered towards people who are, you know, surface level interest to more intermediate. And we really want anyone and everyone who, you know, someone's just like, I know people do this all the time. They jump online and they're slightly interested in something. So they Google it and they want, you know, they Google beginner bonsai tips or something. And maybe our podcast will show up and that would be great. But if it gets flooded out, then nobody,
right?
Not saying that nobody will ever listen to our show. We got, you know, we have plenty of people listening now. It's just, it creates this wall and me and Carmen and Mike are over here working to demystify bonsai. And these AI art images are adding a layer of mysticism.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not productive to the art world as a whole. So I don't know. There's plenty more to be said about this, and I'm sure and I would love to hear Matt's side on this as well, being a musician as well, because I'm sure there's a whole music world scare in it right now, because it being back to the Spotify thing, I remember if Spotify is generating the content, like for instance, they want to generate a podcast, there's no stopping them and they'll make it.
Right.
There's nobody working to make that podcast. The bot that they programmed is working for free for them. So at the end of the day, there's nobody to bill. Think about that for a second. Let that settle in for, you know, like you, Carmen, let that settle in. But like our listeners, like sit there and like even like pause this episode and think about a world where content is being fed to you so quickly, and then the platform that's feeding it to you is not even like they're not working to make it quality or make it original or unique in any way. And then that becomes the norm, and that becomes more, it becomes a dystopian kind of feel, like a science fiction dystopian, but you don't even realize it's happening. Yeah. So I don't need to be dark and stuff, but like,
oh, no, I mean, if you want to get dark, you can, I can go there, but it's hard because there's so much good potential with AI and what it could do and how it could be helpful and useful and create wonderful things. And I really hope that what's happening right now with just kind of creating all this junk, I hope eventually that kind of tapers off and like it becomes like as it gets more well-developed or more useful that like we move past this kind of crap that's being fed to us. I really hope that people can, you know, go there. But yeah, there's definitely kind of a dystopian feeling surrounding it and the bad possibilities that could present themselves. Ugh.
Yeah. If somebody out there listens to our show that has some kind of say in this world of like, you know, some, maybe you're you work in computers or you are an artificial intelligence engineer of some kind or something. If you listen to our show, just putting it out there. I know there really isn't any rights. There aren't any rights to information online. It's always been an issue. But if you're a listener and you do this type of stuff, maybe you could be a lobbyist for this kind of stuff and like help us out, because I'm not scared of losing my job in Boneside because of it. It just makes it harder to get to the people who we would like to reach. So anyway, we can move on. Feel like we've talked enough. And I hope I don't have to talk about this again.
I think we're just getting started.
Yeah, unfortunately. I really hope so. It's just like something. I hope it's a fad, but you know how things are. Anyway, so I mentioned earlier it's, you know, pressing 100 here. I know we have listeners in Australia, a good chunk of people. I always have to mention this because a lot of our patrons too, we have a chunk of patrons that are Australia. How's it going down there? And
it's how you going? How you going?
Yeah, I said how you going on accident, and then one of our listeners was like, actually, you're not wrong. But yeah, I know down there for you guys, it is down there. Is that something? I want one of our Australian listeners to tell us. Has it always been like a down there thing, or is that just something that like us dumb Americans always say, like English say, you know, old English, stupid, you know, kind of way to reference it? Like, because you have a brother,
dumb Americans, yeah.
Is that something that you would know of?
Well, or? I mean, they call it Oz, like you're going to Oz. They call it the upside down, but I think that might just be them.
I like that better. That way better.
The
reason why I mention Australia is because it's winter time, basically, or it's is it dead winter? It's something like that.
They're probably starting to encroach on spring.
And so it's like medium winter.
It's medium winter.
Yeah.
They're like, oh God, these Americans.
It's like thawed out winter. But here we are kind of getting towards the end. We have done seasonal checkups on how to care for your trees during the summertime, especially with our recent episode where we talked about summer dormancy. Please, if you haven't listened to the episode yet and you're new here, at least go back. And if you're not about sappy parenthood stuff, fast forward to the summer dormancy section of that episode. There's a lot of stuff there that me, Mike, and Carmen talk about that will kind of be a supplement to what we're talking about here as well. So leading into late summer, these are things that we can't prevent. So it's something we touched on a little bit, is heat stress and just the amount of daylight and amount of moisture uptake that all of our trees are taking right now. And this is going to be different for me versus you, Carmen, because you're in Portland, and then also I'm sure Ann Arbor has a different kind of feel during the summer year as well, so y'all can probably relate to her as well. if you're not in my part of the country. But yeah, typically this time of year, it's August. This is it. This is usually the peak of our summer here in the southeast of the United States. It's not out of the ordinary for us. And it's up in Portland, too, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. It's not out of the ordinary to push like 100 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
High humidities. Now, if you're in where in the United States would it be like right now? It'd just be like pleasant. It'd be like a 75. Would that be
San Francisco?
Something like that.
Somewhere on the coast.
Yeah. If you live in an area where if you're listening to this episode right now and it's like 70 degrees or 75.
And it's not miserable.
And you're like, oh, it's hot. But you're like, the plants outside are still thriving and look great. Then this episode's probably not for you. But but there are certain things. So there's a reason why. And sometimes I have people come into the nursery and they talk to me about this. Is there's a reason why bonsai is very popular in certain parts of our country. So Florida, Louisiana, Texas, North Carolina are kind of like hot spots for bonsai in my neck of the woods. Mm-hmm. Because these are optimal growing locations for bonsai. Portland is also very similar to us. And some of the biggest and baddest bonsai professionals hang out there and do their thing out there. Why? Because we have a full season swing. So you could have a good winter, a brutal summer, which you need that summer anyway. It's part of the tree cycle for growing seasons. And then you have a tapered off fall. And those are all really important things for growing bonsai. So kind of closing that remark, I'll let you kind of take the floor for a second. After I say this is a, I had like someone come into the nursery Saturday and whatever. It's not relevant to this. You might listen to this episode and that was like weeks ago, whatever. But somebody came in during the weekend at my nursery and was like, ooh, it's flaming hot Cheetos out here. How could you ever grow a bonsai in this environment? And I'm like, well, actually, this is one of the best places in the United States to grow a bonsai, especially if you want to grow deciduous. I mean, you got some banging species down here. And I'm like, this hot, humid summer actually is a positive for our trees. Uh-huh. So they were just like, whatever. And then like bought a juniper and then left. So it's believe me when I say this is a great time of year. This is a very crucial time of year, is like kind of step down from our hot summer. So it might feel the hottest, but this is the peak. We can only go down from here. So how are you feeling about this time?
I'm over summer. Summer is the worst. That's my personal opinion about summer. But it's a really good time to kind of be doing all the stuff that we haven't really had time for at other times of the year. We're kind of winding down summer. We're getting into some cooler nights, just starting to have some cooler weather. We still have some hot days ahead of us, but I'm starting to notice a lot of root growth. So now that all of the, you know, the foliage is out, everything is, you know, it's just kind of photosynthesizing and storing, you know, all the top stuff is grown out and just kind of being there and existing. There's a lot more underground growth, it seems. I'm seeing roots poking out of mosses. It's really fun to see. Yeah.
You shared a video on, bonsai or?
Yeah. And we've got this one tree on a water cover meter that essentially it's every year it kind of grows out through the moss, creates these really bright orange roots that you can see. And even underneath it grows out of the pot and then creates kind of a mat of roots. I see a lot of roots on maples this time of year, mostly is what I'm seeing. And the hemlocks too, they're the ones that are mounded are growing right out of their mounds, which is really fun. So, great time for fertilizing, great time to, you know, be watering correctly, going through your wet dry cycle, especially on those days where it's not a bajillion degrees. So it's just kind of a really good time to take good care of your trees essentially and, start to beef them up for fall and winter.
Yeah. This is technically second spring. And for Louisiana, we have a technically a second spring because it cools off and then it's cool and then it gets hot again, then it gets cool again, then it gets hot, and then it barely freezes. So like we do kind of have a second spring advantage here. So we get like another grow season where we could elongate and thicken and set branches with wire and stuff. In fact, I'm taking in my natives, like I got hackberries and couple of my elm varieties, like cedar elms, and I'm going through and I can actually do some hard cutbacks. I can do some wiring and kind of moving things around. And by the end of this year, those branches will be set by the time that defoliation happens. So if you want to work quickly, this is the time to get those things going. Cause like you said, fertilize, water. And another thing that I think that's really interesting you brought up, I really like that you said this, is like water correctly. Because nothing can hurt the tree worse than going in and water, because it's summer. And you're like, oh crap, my tree's gonna die. And then you get brown tips and you're like, oh no, it's not getting watered enough. And you're watering the living hell out of your tree. You know, because I've got a swamp maple. It's just like one of the most minute, smallest little trees in my collection. It's just a little Acer rubrum that I grew from a seed. And I love the little tree. It's a cute little plant. It's in a little, it's in a purple pot. It's in a purple round container. And I've been growing it for, it was a seedling 7 years ago, and it's still like barely bigger than a pencil, but it's got movement and I've cut into it. And so that's a cool little plant, and it's got brown tips and it is a Acer rubrum. How does an Acer rubrum get overwatered? You know, but its biggest issue is that it's technically still like kind of always in that sapling kind of mode because it's so small and it never really got a chance to become like a larger developed plant. So it's always kind of in this mode of like struggling against what I'm doing. And so it's put so many roots in that container that now it's basically cutting off oxygen to itself. And I just can't get enough water and enough oxygen to the roots quick enough for the shoots to extend this time of year. And there's nothing I can really do about it other than what Mike has mentioned in the past, where you go get old cheapy blinds from like the hardware store. So like just take some white blinds and then cut them and put a collar on the pot to help increase the water column of your container. That could do some work for you, especially in heavily compacted roots. And then double potting does work. But if you're double potted and then the main root system of your plant that you're trying to keep healthy is already kind of, it's already done what it can. I mean, this little maple has roots growing like a inch above the actual, like where its little nabari is. So there's fibrous roots everywhere with moss and then fibrous roots. And then I'm like, I can't get this out of here because I could set the tree back. If I cut this, I can't repot it. I can't do any root pruning stuff. So it's this struggle of keep the tree happy until fall happens, and then I can set up to do a repotting next year. So these are little things that little things that will look like they're a negative impact on your trees this time of year. Because like you said, Carmen, like there's a lot of trees putting, like maples and elms and bald cypresses here are growing like crazy. And so when you see your trees struggling and you're like, I water and I fertilize, you might be watering too much.
Yeah.
Which is hard. It's a hard thing to say.
I know. You know what? Like the last thing you want to do is tell somebody to not water their tree. But if your tree's always wet, maybe let it dry down a little bit.
And watering too much accelerates growth to the point where the tree's going to be like, it's go time. And then it's so hot and the days are so long, the tree's constantly growing. And then if there's not enough fertilizers, not enough, if there's not enough nutrients and energy on reserve, then you'll get chlorotic looking growth much easier this time of year as well. And before I go too far, you have dealt with collections. Mm-hmm. So give me kind of your take on, like, if you're curating collection, like for Ann Arbor or for Michael's collection, do you see what other issues do you see that do they line up for what I'm saying as far as my experiences? Because you have to keep in mind, I'm a bonsai nurseryman. Carmen's a curator.
Yeah.
So
The one big difference is that this time of year, we are pretty much done pruning until leaf drop. So you're in a climate where you can go ahead and do another cutback and have a flush that will harden off before winter. Our cutoff date is usually about August 1st, sometime that first week of August. We don't prune anything until fall, until like leaves are dropping from this point on, because any new growth may not have time to harden off before our first frost. So that's our biggest difference. So we've done all of our summer pruning, and then any other prunes will be in October, November, and beyond. And this time of year, kind of what we're looking out for are pests. We'll see some funguses, some spider mites. But we are having a second flush on anything that we've pruned. And sorry, I'm watching the mail truck. It's being very interesting. My mailbox fell over and I had to like prop it up because I'm like waiting for a delivery. So I'm like,
seeing if you'll actually put it in there.
Yeah. Like, please deliver that. I kind of need it anyway. Sorry. I'm distracted. And you know, you're going to see, like you're saying, you're going to see some brown tips on stuff. You're going to see, you can't always have a plant that looks perfect. And it's one of those things, again, I don't want to like tell people to like, oh, don't worry if your leaves are turning brown, or don't worry if, you know, but you're going to see, you know, there's going to be some leaves that are a little bit chewed up. There's going to be some leaves that have a little bit of, you know, brown spots on them or whatever. If you have like if there's like an overall issue with your tree, obviously do something about it, but you might see little bits of damage just from the summer. And usually that's not anything to worry about. It's just, you know, what happens. I was going somewhere else with that too. We're seeing a lot of old pine needles starting to yellow up and fall off. And that's, again, totally normal. You'll see this from now throughout the fall. As the new growth hardens off, a lot of times they're shedding old needles that they don't need anymore. That's good. That's normal. You want that because that means that they're happily growing. So if you see needles yellowing or falling off, old ones, not your new ones, your old ones, try not to freak out.
What about junipers?
Yeah, you'll get some old foliage yellowing and falling off there too. So that can be tricky to determine, like, is this just old stuff or is it a fungus? Usually juniper funguses affect the tips, not the interior too much. So if you have yellowing stuff on the interior, that's usually pretty normal. You could just clean that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have a lot of discoloring on the tips, or if everything's discoloring really fast, then you've got a problem. So
I worked a Fumina juniper from Guy's collection not too long ago, and we're kind of forming a little project with this tree. It's an old Fumina needle juniper. It's quite large for the species, to be honest. And I was going through it and kind of working it. This was 2 weeks ago. And Guy was telling me his experiences with the Fumina, especially in Louisiana, is that their third year growth is going to inevitably, like, basically brown up and die. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have to be really keen on the newer growth that you have developing this time of year, especially mm-hmm. to be the replacement to set up the cycle for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. So that sounds correct to you.
I don't know it that specifically, mm-hmm. but that sounds about right.
Yeah. It's something that that's why I mentioned it. Like, I always try to filter it through your thoughts as well. Mm-hmm. Because These are different ways that we deal with certain species, you know, and it could be different climate to climate, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, yellowing of foliage, I mean, clear it out. Look, you know, if you let that stuff stick around, could, you know, especially on junipers, it could cause fungal issues if it stays too mm-hmm. long.
Yeah, we do a lot of juniper cleaning this time of year.
Fungal problems from just airspace, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you clear out those spots, the airspace opens up and you could get back budding there.
Yeah, so. that's really helpful. And it just looks nicer too.
Yeah, you don't want all that. Deciduous trees. So since it's kind of like more on my end is like your deciduous trees, you might like, I look outside, I can actually see them from my home office, straight out my back window. I could see them and like some of them are super green. So the American hornbeams are just kicking ass. They mm-hmm. love it. They love this. Bald cypresses, same thing. Water elms, amazing. Musk maple that we mentioned from previous episode, summer dormancy mm-hmm. episode, not feeling it.
Really?
Yep.
Mine are so thrilled right now. They're just loving everything.
Are yours shaded?
Yeah.
Yeah. So mine doesn't get shade all day because I don't have an area set up specifically for that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I have a tree line that hits my collection perfectly midday that kind of starts shading, but it's mm-hmm. just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a cool, because I know that like I've seen where you're growing some of your cuttings for the musk maples is like
yeah.
it's in that cool spot between the greenhouse and the mm-hmm. the shop. So that's that microclimate's helping your little trees grow better.
Mm-hmm.
And I have witnessed that at the nursery. We have cool spots at the nursery. We have a shade net greenhouse, basically kind of the same setup next to our big greenhouse. And I've got musk maple cuttings in there that I've taken the same age as the ones that you have, and they're doing
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
I have potted them, and I cut them back a little bit to encourage them to grow out. Something to refer back to, I know we'd said some cutting challenge stuff. These are pertaining to the cutting challenge thing that we've given to the patrons. The musk maples that I took, I ran into an issue. Let's say I made a boo-boo. I stuck my cuttings deep into the soil into inorganic mix. I uncovered the soil down to find my actual nabari to my tree so that when I potted them up, mm-hmm. I could develop surface roots. I had a good 2 to 3 inches of straight trunk on the majority of them.
Yep.
That will happen. Now, I didn't mess up my stock because I did want to make some deciduous-shaped plants. They are still small enough that I could put wire on them, but we know that the musk maple is not the most flexible tree.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are doing cutting stuff, I personally have taken cuttings in the early summertime, like late spring, early summer.
Mm-hmm.
I tugged them and there's roots on them. Up-pot them now, but when you up-pot your cuttings, this is something for this time of year, us in Louisiana, this is a production thing. If you're interested in growing bonsai from cuttings, take this and run with this. Take your cuttings out of your cell trays. If they stay in there for too long and they go into the winter, you're going to get all kinds of issues with roots in there. Get them out of the cell tray. Take the roots, like come down the trunk with your soil until you find where lateral roots are growing out of your cutting. Because that's why we take cuttings in the first place, for lateral roots, because you don't have a taproot to worry about. If you have any roots that are cutting that on your cutting that are going down, cut them off. Leave as many lateral roots as possible. Plant that level in the pot so that you don't have like roots weight like raised to the side. You have like uneven and all funky looking. Put them all nice and lateral into the pot. Organic. I know we talk about bonsai soil for a lot of things here. We talk about pumice, lava, akadama. Get yourself some organic mix. Put your young cuttings into that. Sift in some pumice or lava if you want to. You need fibrous roots to develop to make a nice sheen of your root ball to set yourself up for the future of a bonsai. So that's something else you could be doing right now as well. And then pop those puppies into the shade house or a shady area of your yard where it's nice and cool so that they have time to recover, because their roots are not going to be the happiest, but you're not going to be bare rooting them. You're only going to be up potting and removing downward and up and stuff that... You've got a root that pops up out of the soil, like jumps up like a serpent, serpentine root, like a serpent, look like a sea serpent. I'm going to say serpent one more time. So like a root that does that, cut those off too. They're not going to help you. They're going to get big. Unless you're doing a Niagara, like their exposed root style, knock those out of there. Just cut them out.
It always cracks me up when you get the noodle roots. They're like ramen, just kind of sticking out the soil. Yeah,
all over the place.
I like serpent better, but I like to call them the noodles.
Yeah, noodle roots are not great.
The noodle roots.
Like runners, especially if they're trapped in that cell tray for so long. A cell tray is like shaped like a, like it's like sometimes it's like the beaker shape.
Mm-hmm.
Cell trays, and they get stuck in those and they'll go down and they'll hit the bottom and they'll come back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then your roots are funky. And so you got to get those roots sorted out. What were you going
to
say?
There's a hemlock in the yard that we repotted this year that's got a big old noodle sticking out of it. And I'm like, of all trees, why is this random hemlock got this giant noodle sticking out? It's so funny. Anyway.
Yeah. Those noodle roots or serpent roots or running roots. So roots that normally hit the side of a pot container, or if it's in a moss ball.
Mm-hmm.
It could. I've got bald cypresses and moss balls on stone slabs that have these roots popping out the sides, and then
mm-hmm.
they just harden off because they have nowhere else to go, and they mm-hmm. still will create runners. Air pruning goes a long way, but if there's already a root issue there, the root's not going to fix itself. It's just going to grow roots back into the root ball off of that root, mm-hmm. and then you're going to cause yourself more issues. So this is kind of like a repotting conversation, but at the same time, this is more of just a up-potting cuttings conversation. So don't go out there and start repotting trees and trying to correct running roots.
If you don't live in a subtropical or tropical area, do what Evan's telling you next spring. Don't do it right now.
Yeah.
You're going to be in big trouble.
Or if you're in Australia, you can get ready to do it now.
There you go. I mean, if you do have cuttings, what you can do this time of year is pull off some of that topsoil. If you think your roots are further down, you can just kind of uncover that top layer to... If you're concerned that you don't have roots, you know, till an inch or two down, you can do that. But I wouldn't go through and mess with it too much this time of year, unless you have a greenhouse or you're somewhere super warm and humid.
Greenhouses make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
So winding down for summer, Carmen made a good point a little bit earlier that I wanted to bring up really quick before we wrap this, is saying about stop trimming. So for your area where you live, mm-hmm. stop trimming...
And deciduous
trees.
You can still trim junipers for a bit.
Yeah, for a good bit. You can trim them until like actual dormancy comes up.
Yeah.
But for deciduous trees, this is something that I saw Andrew Robson mm-hmm. put out a video not too long ago about mm-hmm. pruning practices. Shout out to Andrew. This is a very good video. We go check mm-hmm. it on YouTube on his channel, Raikuyu. So he talked about trimming the like 3 weeks before wind down. So not 3 weeks before winter, 3 weeks before leaf change.
Mm-hmm.
So here in Louisiana, I'm not going to get leaf change probably until like late November, mid-December. Yeah, I know,
crazy.
Right?
It might not even
It might not even happen till January, some cases. And like the first week of January, we'll start actually seeing that.
And you get like fall color and go to the pumpkin patch.
Yep. Exactly. We
Happy
do that.
New Year.
Yeah. Louisianians, we run out to the pumpkin patch. It's like 80 degrees outside. We're like, oh, it's a good day. We're wearing like flannels.
Everybody's
stuff.
Like, yeah, pulling out your flannels and your like knit caps and you're like, oh, and you're like pumpkin spice lattes. It's like 95 degrees and your pumpkin patch.
We did a fall thing last year where we did like corn maze. You've done corn mazes because you're in the Midwest, obviously.
Yeah.
Y'all's corn mazes must be death traps. Because they're so much bigger than ours. But yeah, we did one in Louisiana last year. We started out. It was like 70 degrees during the day. We're like, oh, this is awesome. We're all like dressed in our cute like fall clothes. Like, you know, yeah, like you said, jeans and long sleeve. And then midway through the corn maze, it's like it's Louisiana. It's like the blue skies, humid, blasting heat. It's like 80 something degrees. We're sweating. We're like, well, this isn't cute anymore. So, but yeah. So yeah, make sure it's like, just to close it out, trimming practices on deciduous trees 3 weeks before wind down. So for us in Louisiana, you have to become like a miniature version of like a meteorologist and just start tracking the weather. You know,
mm-hmm.
don't pick up a farmer's almanac. I found this to be not very accurate recently, but yeah, we have like technologies now, like apps and stuff, so go check that out.
Look mm-hmm.
for you're actually going to wind down, and you can, if you see fall color and you're still trimming, you just stop and wait for all the leaves to fully drop. First leaf drop, stop trimming, and then watch everything go fall color, And when all the leaves start voluntarily dropping the leaves on their own, like you walk up and you kind of move the branch on your own and it starts falling all the leaves off, then you can go back and do your winter silhouette trim. End of thought there. Okay. So anyway, so that wraps up our conversation for coming towards the end of summer. We like to do these seasonal checkups. If you're listening to our podcast and you feel like you've heard something that we've said like this before, this is how we learn bonsai, is rinse and repeat. You might hear us say some things more than once. We need to hear it. We need to say it. This is how we keep up on our bonsai practice. And this is what bonsai is. It's rinse and repeat. So
I've been hearing some of the same things for like 10 years and they just started making sense. Like sometimes sometimes it just matters how somebody says it. And then you're like, you kind of got it, but then you really get it. So, you know. Yeah.
If we have to say it 1,000 times for you guys to understand it and you guys want to keep listening,
say it 1,000 times.
Yeah. I know we're for a bonsai show where it's like, it's just I don't know how to describe this platform anymore, that the way it's just kind of a conversation now. But if you don't have anyone to talk about bonsai to and you're listening to our podcast show, welcome and keep listening. That's what we're here for. So let me wrap it up because it's hot and I know that I need to go check my trees too. And Carmen says she's got trees to check. It's time to water. So we go ahead and shut off the Patreon list. It's going to be starting off the list with Wallet. The list has changed. So if you hear your name out of order, don't take it personally.
I'm going to have to learn a new order before I'm quizzed again.
Yep. We're going to quiz for our Christmas special episode this coming year. And it might be our 100th episode by the time we get there. I don't know yet.
That'd be fun.
Wallace in the Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Radtron Studio, Kyle Forward, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominguez, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Dale. Myrick Bonsai Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Baccaccini, Gilbert Horowitz, Sean Seaman, Barry's Bonsai, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crean, Victrina Ridgeway, Tim Arsenal, Chris Bassoon, the other name I call him sometimes. Oh, nope. J.A.S. Potts, Bonsai Marine, A.C. Castle, Luis Torres, Karen Codswell, Austin Adkins, David N., Chase, Taylor Peacock, Greenwich Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan Gardano. I took your phonetics pronunciation on your last name out, so sorry about that. Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Dickie Auth, and Montana Bridgman. Specimen Best Buds, woohoo. You guys did great, but the Specimen Best Buds had to show you up for some reason. Unry you in, and Bill Butler Bills by you. Thank you guys so much for supporting and helping the little things make content, continue to press on and be your favorite bonsai podcast show. So if you want to check out any more information on me, go over to underhillbonsai.com, read articles that I've written, see stuff on underhillbonsaistore.com that we have available for purchase through my nursery. We also have we have little things merch like t-shirts. I'm trying to get the hats up on the website as well. And then for Mike, you go over to kitsunebonsai.com. Check out Mike Lane's stuff. Mike Lane does traveling around the United States, especially in my area. He'll do, but he's been doing a lot more traveling to the West Coast and also New England states recently. South Florida bonsai artist specializes in shohin and tropical species. And then for Carmen, where they check out your stuff.
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai, and be sure to check out the Purple Pot Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group, at purplepotsociety.org.
Yep, and I'm a member. Little Things is a member of the Purple Pot Society. Don't have to be a woman to sponsor. Support your local women and national women bonsai artists by becoming a member. So you guys have a great week. We'll catch up with you guys next time on the Flippity Flop.
The Flippity Flop. Bye-bye.